Now we're going on to item number 8.
Seven, Leviathan.
Seven, sorry. The Leviathan Line Project.
Thank you, Chair Horn and members of the board again. My name is Chuck Curtis. I'm a supervising water resource control engineer here in the Osaka Tahoe office. I'd also like to introduce Doug Carey, the senior engineering geologist that works on the Leviathan Mine project. The Leviathan Mine is a former sulfur mine located in Alpine County, about an hour southeast of Lake Tahoe here. It's located at an elevation of about 7,000 feet. The access to the site is over dirt four service roads with difficult access in the wintertime. This is an aerial view of the mine site, and all of that area that is white or red also is a disturbed area at the site. It includes about 250 acres of disturbed area that were the result of open pit mining by Anaconda Mining Company in the 1950s and 60s. So just a little bit of history here. The mine site actually included some very limited mining back in the 1860s to supply some materials for Comstock oil. During the 1930s, there was some pretty extensive tunnel mining, underground mining at the site. But even considering that extensive underground mining, the aquatic resources, Leviathan Creek, etc., were not really affected by those activities. In 1952, Anaconda bought the site and commenced open pit mining at the site. So as part of that, they removed the top of the mountain, essentially, to gain access to the main sulfur ore body. That material that they removed, that overburden, was contained acidic generating materials. And once they opened up the mountain, the sulfur-bearing materials started going acidic and produced acidic mine drainage at the site. Once Anaconda was done with the site in 1962, they just left. And they left a mess. And as a result of those activities, the stream below the site was essentially killed of all aquatic life. For about 15 miles downstream to the East Fork Carson River, and also had effects on the East Fork Carson River. The state bought the site in 1983 to conduct some pollution abatement projects at the site, and responsibility for managing those activities were given to this board. In 2000, the U.S. EPA put this site on the National Priorities List, making it a Superfund site. Since that time, the Water Board and the successor in liability, or the heir in liability to Anaconda Mining, that's Atlantic Richfield Company, have been under orders from the U.S. EPA to conduct certain activities at the site. And I'll talk about those more as we go on. But first, just a little bit of a couple of photos about the history of the site here. When the Water Board started to conduct their remedial activities at the site, this was a typical view here. This is Leviathan Creek that is cutting through mine waste that was deposited in the creek channel mine waste was deposited 150 foot deep or so. Pretty amazing amount of mine waste that was just put into the creek channel to get it out of their way so that they could access the ore. Of course, the creek going through this waste moved many thousands of tons of material down the stream channel, impacting the stream itself, aquatic life in the stream, etc. These are a couple of the waste piles and the delta formed by the creek after it emerged through its what we call the Grand Canyon of Leviathan that we saw earlier there. And this shows Leviathan Creek where it joins Mountaineer Creek a few miles downstream of the mine. So when board member Cox first saw this photo earlier today, she said, I said, well, this is Leviathan Creek in the foreground, and that's Mountaineer Creek in the background, just at their confluence. She said, oh, I thought that was a sandbar, and it didn't look like that was water, but that is a slurry of water containing mine waste. That was pretty typical in that time. And, from that point on downstream, of course, the effects were pretty devastating. So when the Water Board built this pollution abatement project starting in 1983 for, and I think actually finishing up in 1985, but most work was done in 1984, several key components were constructed. One, there was a pit lake in the lower left areas, the pit where the ore body was the focus of the mining. And there was a lake there. Before they could do really any work in that pit, they installed an underdrain system, what we know as the pit underdrain. They took the tops off of the waste piles and created ponds where, in the top of the picture, ponds 2 south and 2 north are located. Top of the material that was on those, they put back in the pit, regraded about 20 acres of the pit, installed stormwater conveyance system to get good water off of the site as quick as possible, limit infiltration of that would then cause acidic seeps. And they channelized the Leviathan Creek where it flows through the mine site.
Can you point that out?
I can probably point that out if I figure out how to use it.
The middle round button is the laser.
Thing here. Okay. Leviathan Creek enters the site here, and at about here, it becomes channelized and ultimately in a concrete channel to this point. And that was done to separate the good water of Leviathan Creek from the watershed above it, from the mine waste that it was had been traveling through. From this point, the creek enters 2 60 diameter concrete pipes. It goes steeply down the hill to an exit point here, where it again enters a concrete channel down to about this point, where it then enters the natural channel of the creek. So the idea was to separate the creek from the mine waste to reduce infiltration of precipitation and separate the good water from the bad. And the bad water that was being collected from this pit underdrain and from a formal tunnel, one of the only tunnels left at the site, this tunnel at number 5, that was discharging freely at the site. So those acidic sources are captured and stored in ponds 1, 2 north and south, which are all at the same elevation. So those are captured and transported by gravity. It doesn't take any pumps or anything like that. It's all passive. So the idea in the 1984 project was to evaporate this acidic mine drainage to the extent that was possible, considering the available land there. It's in a quite steep canyon. There's very limited areas to build ponds to evaporate this acidic drainage. So the upper ponds, when they fill, they would discharge down to pond 3, the middle there, and then ultimately to pond 4, and then to the creek. Starting in 1999, the Water Board commenced pilot treatment operations at the site to treat this captured acidic mine drainage and discharge that treated water back to Leviathan Creek. The benefit of this treatment not only to is to turn good water back to the creek, but is to provide storage space, additional storage space in those ponds for the next coming winter's precipitation that falls directly on those, and the accumulated acidic mine drainage from these two primary sources. Because of the site's location, access is challenging in the wintertime. There can be many feet of snow there, and access and operations for treatment are challenging, and currently no treatment is conducted there in the wintertime. So since 2000, as it's been a Superfund site under the direction of US EPA, as I said, the Water Board and Atlantic Virtual Company have been under orders to do certain actions. Under CERCLA, which is the Superfund law, or the, it's a big, long, nasty thing to try to call out. I'll just call it Superfund Removal Operations. The Water Board's required by EPA to collect and treat the acid mine drainage that they've been collecting and treating before the site became a Superfund site. We have been conducting spring treatment when there have been very wet winters, so we've done that as necessary. We're not required to do that by EPA, but because the mission of this board is to protect water quality, there's a very strong impetus to do everything that we can to prevent pond overflow. And so when we've been forced with conditions once we started treatment in 1999, if we can do it, if it's possible, we've done spring treatment to prevent untreated acid mine drainage from discharging to the creek. Atlantic Richfield Company also collects and treats water from three different sources at the site. And their operations primarily are from late spring through mid-fall. They collect two sources and during the summertime treat that. When they're not capturing that, so from the fall through the early spring, those sources discharge directly into the creek. And those do have adverse effects on the creek. On the southern, I guess that'd be the northern part of the site, in another drainage that was affected by overburden that was pushed off the top of the mountain into that drainage, is a seep called the Aspen Seep. And Atlantic Richfield Company maintains a bioreactor treatment system there, and that system collects and treats that small source year-round. It was designed to be semi-passive, but it's it takes a lot of power and activity actually to run. So this is what the Water Board's treatment operations look like. At Pond 1, we have treatment system that basically is just a big mixer that mixes lime with this acidic water. It raises the pH from about a little over 2 to a little over 8. That results in the precipitation of all these minerals, the metals, iron. You're seeing the color of the water here is from iron. But it also includes cadmium and copper and arsenic. And arsenic is certainly one of the key health risk factors at this site. As I said, occasionally we have had to conduct spring treatment. This is a picture of spring treatment operations that were conducted in April and May of 2011. We used Pond 3 essentially as a batch reactor and mixed lime with the water in Pond 3. And then when it reached the appropriate pH, we just decanted the good water off of that and then let water from the upper ponds back down in there, mixed lime with that, and operated that in a batch mode. When you're out there in the winter or spring, you see things that you'd have no idea were there in the winter or in the summertime when most people are out there. For example, this is a seep that we call the pressure load seep that is, this winter was a very significant source of acidic mine drainage that you would have no idea if you were just out there in the summer that something like this was even there. But this is just one of numerous seeps that we're not capturing, ARCO's not capturing, but ultimately will have to be dealt with. Now, the removal actions, starting with the Water Board's 1984 Pollution Abatement Project and the subsequent treatment operations and collection and treatment by Atlantic Bridgeville Company, has resulted in some significant stream water quality improvement and improvement in the aquatic life that reside in the stream. This information is from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who has been doing surveys in the creek, and this shows two locations, Lower Leviathan Creek and Bryant Creek, below the confluence of Mountaineer and Leviathan Creeks, and shows for 1989, 2006, and 2013 of estimated populations of trout, various species of trout in the creek. And as you can see, in 1998, there was not a single fish in Leviathan Creek. There were some downstream in Bryant Creek after mixing with the unaffected Bryant Creek and other creeks, but still it was significantly affected as well. Compare that with 2013, where we have a much healthier population. It's still affected in Lower Leviathan Creek, there's no doubt there. But the signs are favorable. Conditions are improving, and we see that if we do capture and treat all of the sources there at the site, we can definitely restore this creek, which at one time was quite a very active and excellent fishery. So as part of the U.S. EPA's oversight of this facility, this mine site, Superfund site, there are remedial investigation and feasibility study activities that have been required of Atlantic Bridgeville Company. So Atlantic Bridgeville Company is currently conducting a remedial investigation activities at the site and have been for the last few years. There's still quite a bit of investigation to fully characterize the extent of contamination and then to evaluate that contamination's risks to human health and ecological receptors. Now, the feasibility study will evaluate feasible alternatives to address those risks and reduce those risks to acceptable levels. That's you know, just a few years down the road here. But when that feasibility study is completed, it will have a recommended remedial alternative that will then be codified in a record of decision that the EPA will establish. Following that, there'll be design and implementation of that final remedy. So since 2007, the Water Board, the Regional Board, the State Board, and the State of California have been in litigation with Atlantic Richfield Company over a 1983 settlement agreement that this Water Board had with Atlantic Richfield Company. Just as we were about to start trial in 2012, the parties agreed to a settlement in principle. And that settlement in principle laid out the tasks that each side would be responsible for and the cost sharing for those various tasks. Associated with that, Atlantic Richfield Company will be completing the RIFS. The Water Board will take over interim combined treatment if that is found to be feasible. This year, Atlantic Richfield Company has started an investigation to evaluate whether the Water Board's sources and the sources that Atlantic Richfield Company is currently responsible for, whether those can be combined and treated in a single treatment system, which makes a lot of sense economically and operationally. So they're conducting that investigation right now. If that proves out, then the Atlantic Richfield Company may need to tweak their treatment system some to accommodate our accepting our discharges. And then the Water Board will take over responsibility for running that system. So Atlantic Richfield Company will be, you know, out of the picture as far as day-to-day operations of that combined treatment system. After the ROD, the Water Board will do the remedial design, we will construct the remedy and operate the remedy. For that, Atlantic Richfield Company will pay 75% of the costs, except for O&M, they'll pay 70% of the costs, and the Regional Board will be responsible for the remainder. As a result of this impending settlement, the Regional Board sought additional resources from the legislature and were granted July 1, one and a half new positions and some additional contract funding. Because of these additional activities, the interim combined treatment and then ultimately the design and construction, we need some more bodies to help us conduct those because we're also conducting all the other maintenance and other activities that we have going on there. In the future, we'll have to go back to the legislature seeking additional funding when it comes time to actually do the design and then ultimately the treatment because our current funding is not sufficient to handle those. For the design and the construction, you know, kind of one-time costs, but they will be significant. The construction cost will be very significant. And then we'll need ongoing funding for long-term operation and maintenance of the facility, or at least our 30% share of those costs for that long-term O&M. To give you an idea on costs, to date, the Water Board has spent about roughly $25 million at the site, including constructing the pollution abatement project, annual treatment, monitoring, investigations, pilot studies for revegetation and similar. The Atlantic Richfield coming in their relatively short time at the site has spent about $75 million for their capture and treatment and their investigation activities associated with the remedial investigation. The remedy itself is likely to cost in the tens to low hundreds of millions of dollars, really likely in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's a big cost. It's a big project. So this settlement, poses some challenges, but also some opportunities for the Water Board. One of the opportunities and challenges is that Atlantic Richfield Company and the Water Board are going to be working together more closely on developing the remedy and implementing it. Certainly the Water Board is going to have the lead on the design and construction, but Atlantic Richfield is going to have input without doubt, because it's to their interest to see that the costs are as low as possible to do this project. And certainly from the Water Board side, we want the cost to be as low as they can be also, as long as the project protects human health and ecological receptors. It's a great opportunity for staff here at the Water Board to be involved in the significant design and construction of this project. It's a unique opportunity for Water Board staff that they don't normally do. And so that's a great professional challenge and opportunity for staff. Because we'll be working together with Atlantic Richfield Company on this, we expect that there may be a quicker timeline to affect restoration of the affected creeks and the mine site. One of the very significant challenges is in all the details of this nearly 100-page settlement document that's about to be fully signed off on. Because of an agricultural company is going to be paying the Water Board for its activities, including staff costs, contractor costs, do the project, there's significant accounting and reporting to an agricultural company on what our costs, have been, or first expected to be, and then what they actually are. And so this is going to be a challenge, it's something that engineers and geologists, environmental scientists, this is not our forte. This is accountants and similar. So we will, as this moves forward, we will likely have to change our staffing profile somewhat on this to have more in the accounting side to assist us with those kind of details. And of course, it's a settlement. Neither side got or is going to get what everything that they wanted out of this, and there will likely be disputes down the road. There's a process in the settlement agreement to deal with those disputes. But that's going to be a challenge going down the road, no doubt. I think it's, I'm happy that we see a path forward. It's a path where we're going to be in the driver's seat on the design and construction of the remedy. I think that's a very good thing for the Water Board and for the environment. Because certainly, it has to comply with CERCLA and be acceptable to the US EPA, but I think that we'll be able to have a greater influence in what the project actually is, because we're going to be designing the So I think that's a very good thing. So that's kind of where we are right now. As I said, the settlement is expected to be finalized shortly. I mean, all of the drafting of that has been completed over these last 2 years. We've had a gang of attorneys from David Coop, who used to be this board's legal counsel, attorneys from the office of the Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office. Outside counsel was very significant in this. We were fortunate that there was an insurance policy that happened to cover this project back in 1984. And so the state had an insurance policy, and so taxpayers are not paying for all these settlement costs, all these attorney fees. So that's a very good thing. We were also able to utilize significant outside experts that the insurance footed that bill for us. So that was a very good thing. We felt we had a very strong case going into trial. We learned a lot about the site preparing for trial. Doug is now a font of wisdom and knowledge about every single thing that ever happened at the site and every piece of paper that was ever produced for the site. So luckily he's going to be here on the project for the foreseeable future. I'm going to be bowing out. I'm going to be retiring at the end of the year, but I'm leaving it in very good hands with Doug. And I'm happy to announce that with the additional staff resources that we were just granted, I've offered a position and the offer has been accepted to return Chris Stetler, who was former senior engineer on the Leviathan Mine project, back to the project. He's been in private practice, civil engineering, for the last 9 years here in the Lake Tahoe Basin mostly. He's very familiar with the project, and now he's got 9 more years of practical engineering experience to add to Doug and our other staff's expertise here. So I think it's going to be a very good hands. It's going to be a wonderful professional challenge for them. I think they're looking forward to it and dreading it at the same time. If you have any questions for me, I'm available if you have. Doug has the most knowledge on the project. If there are any questions.
Questions, Mr. Dias.
Chuck, on slide 16, you write additional resources added by the 2014-15 Budget Act. What is? How does that work?
Well, how that works is last August, I put together a budget change proposal that requested additional staffing and contract resources. It went up to the state board, to Cal EPA, to the governor's office. It got whacked down from 2.5 positions to 1.5 positions. The contract request was not amended, so that was fortunate. That appeared in the governor's January budget, and it made it through to the final budget that the legislature adopted and the governor approved. So that's how that works.
And do you plan to use these 1.5 positions to administer the contract for the cleanup actions at Leviathan?
These resources are explicitly for Leviathan Mine. So we'll be hiring Chris Stetler with one of those 1.5 positions. So he will fill one of those. And the remaining half position, we're still discussing amongst the management team on how best to try to fill that or combine that with other staff resources so that we can, you know, put that towards the project. It's a challenge with a half position to hire half a person. That's a challenge for us. Normally, you can't hire an engineer to work half time, be it 6 months of the year or every other day or something like that. So that's going to be a challenge. But if we can combine it with other resources, then we could work something where a staff works half-time on Leviathan, half-time on other funded projects.
And with ARCO's responsibility for paying for 75% of the effort, how does the state receive reimbursement?
So once we start on the interim combined treatment project, we will be putting forward an estimate of what our annual cost will be. Staff, contracting, materials, paying for the lights, for that fraction of the lights that are on Doug and Chris's cubes, for example, etc. We'll be putting an estimate together. Atlantic Ritual Company will deposit funds equal to 75% of that amount into a special deposits fund that will be managed by the State Water Board for the regional board. And so it will be available to essentially reimburse the Water Board for its costs.
Okay.
As the project goes further forward into remedial design and construction and ultimately operation, more and more of staff's time will be paid by ARCA, ultimately 75%, because they'll be paying that. But until we get through into the interim combined treatment and certainly into remedial design, some of the Leviathan staff will be conducting other activities that aren't covered right now. The ongoing treatment that we're doing right now and other maintenance activities, monitoring, those sorts of things, those aren't covered by that 75%. Ultimately, all of those activities will be enveloped in the final remedy, and certainly at that point, all of our staff time that's working on that project will be covered 75 and 25.
Thank you. No more questions.
I don't have any questions. I really want to thank Doug and Chuck for the amazing tour today. I got all of my questions answered, and to see the magnitude is just incredible. Mr. Sandel?
I have two questions. How automated will the final system, treatment system, be?
We don't know that at this point.
What do you mean?
As much as we can, but that would be preempting the remedy, since we don't know what the final remedy will be.
What do you think we'll be using for power?
We don't know that either. That's part of the RIFS process.
Okay. And the other question I have is, how is the site going to be secured against vandalism?
Most likely fencing. We don't know if there'll be patrols required or not, but if that's required, we'll be implemented.
Thank you.
Mr. Ponsley?
No question.
Just before going on, if I could supplement Doug's comments to Board Member Sandel. The feasibility study will evaluate all of those components, such as power source. You know, right now, diesel power through generators at the site are being used. There is no power line, utility power at the site. There's no phone line. There's no nothing. So part of that feasibility study will look at what are the costs, the trade-offs, the impacts, for example, of bringing utility power to the site. Or is it just better to use diesel generators? The feasibility study will look at we all assume that treatment of acidic mine drainage will be a component of the final remedy. You can't eliminate all of the acid mine drainage generation. So that's going to be a component. But what that looks like, how that operates, whether it's a year-round system, whether it's increasing storage on site and treating campaign style like we do right now, those will be evaluated in the feasibility study, the pros and cons, the costs, long-term feasibility, acceptance by the community, the state. So those are the fun things that that Doug and Chris and Taylor Zimmer and Hannah Shimry, who are working on the project right now, those are the neat things that they'll be able to make sure that Atlantic Richfield Company is evaluating those as part of the feasibility study, because there are a lot of different ways to skin this cat, and how automated it is, how it operates, all of those will come out through the feasibility study process.
Mr. Pumphrey, you said no?
I did say no.
Okay. Mr. Jardine?
Well, I think we've come a long way since 1983. We've got a long ways to go, but I think we're on the right path.
Yeah, it's, you know, we were out there today with board member Cox and Council Niemeyer, and there are fish in the creek below the mine now. Maybe not immediately below the mine, but you know, it is becoming better as those figures from Fish and Wildlife Service identified. Yes, there's a long ways to go. We're really looking forward to finally starting to see that remedy over the edge of the horizon.
So what are the components of the feasibility study? I mean, so you've listed long-term feasibility, cost, acceptance. I mean, there must be parameters that ARCO is working from of how...
Well, CERCLA identifies, there's a very structured process in CERCLA and the feasibility study. First, it has to identify those, you know, reasonable methods to protect human health and the environment. So that's the bottom line. What's the risk? So in certain areas, there may be little ongoing risk downstream of the site. Since the Water Board constructed the pollution abatement project and the other activities that have been going on, we don't have Leviathan Creek flushing huge quantities of sediment down the creek. There have been years and years, decades since 1984, where the creeks had some time to recover, and you know, by eliminating the A and D drainages to the creek, certainly that helps as well. So, protecting human health and the environment. So, it's what's the acceptable risk, and there are accepted risk levels that the EPA is comfortable with. And cancer risk and non-cancer risk for humans, and exactly how they do their ecological risk assessment, I'm not quite sure. I'm not a toxicologist, so I haven't gotten that far into it. But so the bottom line is, it has to protect human health and the environment. There are various ways to help implement that, and that could be, you know, you could restrict access to any place where there was contamination. That would protect human health, but it wouldn't necessarily protect the environment. So In the circle lays out nine criteria, primary criteria, under which the accepted alternative has to meet.
Okay.
I said cost is one of them. Short-term and long-term implementability, community acceptance, state acceptance, and what the other four or five things are, I can't remember off the top of my head, but those are the key things.
Okay.
So, and so, you know, this board, through either indirectly through the executive officer and staff, will provide input to EPA on, is this going to be an acceptable remedy for the state of California? Fish and Game will weigh in on that as well from the Fish and Wildlife point of view.
So is there any chance that once this, what are we calling it, final
remedy?
You have to be careful which word you use there. Will Lahontan be liable for the indefinite future for managing Leviathan? Is there any hope that we will not?
Well, legally, I think, yes, we probably are, but how that is worked in the future, maybe not. For example, you could... the state and this water board could, for example, get an insurance policy that would cover any liability for that site from here on out and pay for operation and maintenance of that. So there are schemes to deal with that. Is Iron Mountain Mine?
That's how Iron Mountain currently works.
Oh, okay. I was wondering.
The water board wasn't an owner.
Right.
Of the property. The state wasn't an owner of that property.
The state is the owner?
Was not.
Was not. Oh,
right.
Okay.
Right. But this property, the state owns it. The state water board is the owner of the property. We manage the site for the state water board and the state as a whole.
Sure would be nice not to have that.
It would be wonderful not to have it, but it would be a really big coin to be able to buy that policy.
Yeah.
To have a third party come in and do the actual cleanup work and O&M going in the future.
But that's certainly something that, I think is appropriate to evaluate. The state, we're responsible for 30% of long-term O&M costs on this site. We'll know here in another 10 years what those costs are, or sooner, and it may well pencil out because of the unknowns out there, how often we may have to replace major capital equipment, what affects a catastrophic earthquake or other natural disaster might have on the remedy. We don't know those and what those effects might have overall as long-term costs that under the current scheme we would be responsible for 30% of. And so it's possible that the accountants and legal minds might determine, we could buy an insurance policy, and yes, it's going to be a lot of coin, as Doug said, but that may pencil out. I don't know. That is a possibility.
So the settlement agreement then doesn't foresee an end to ARCO's liability. It just goes on in perpetuity.
Not.
Okay.
Right. And I heard from legal counsel today that EPA has some concerns about the settlement that they haven't seen. And, they've certainly seen the term sheet, the settlement in principle, that, was an 11-page document that kind of laid out the basics of who would do what and who'd pay for what. Now that has is now a 90-page document or so with all the fine details in that, and trying to get Doug as much flexibility and relief as possible in that document. And EPA expressed concern about whether our deal with Atlantic Ridgefield Company would somehow predetermine what the remedy is going to be and kind of cut EPA out of their role in this. And it absolutely does not do that. The Sun was very clear that although the Water Board will work with the Atlantic Ridgefield Company to try to streamline and reduce costs where appropriate, it's a surplus site. It's going to be run by, overseen by EPA. It has to comply with CERCLA. And so I think that when EPA sees those parts of the settlement agreement, I think they'll feel a lot better. And, we're in a unique position here in that, yes, we'll have an agreement and be partners in some respect with the Atlantic Ridgefield Company here, but we're still the Water Board. We still have a mission to protect and restore water quality, and, that's not going away with this. And so, we have a special relationship with the U.S. EPA. Mm-hmm. We have similar missions, and that's not changing as a result of this. As much as the Atlantic Ridgefield Company might want to tweet that, but we will go along with any great idea that Atlantic Ridgefield Company has to streamline, speed up, reduce costs on this project. As long as human health and the environment are protected, the site's restored appropriately. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
So with that, we move to item number 8, which is closed session. We have nothing for closed session?
No, we have nothing for closed sessions. I was wondering what the yellow card was.
It's just
a
sample.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But actually, we could have a problem. It's
too
late to do a public forum.
You did a public forum. We
can do another public forum.
Oh, okay.
We'll have a public forum now.
Okay.